What's up, everybody? Another fun employment for you this morning, this afternoon, tonight, whatever time you're listening to this. Once again, I'm Pat. I'm your host for Fun Employment, the podcast where we talk about life, work, tech, business, politics. Let me read off the actual list. This is my Twitter bio. Interest, tech, business, politics, books, sports, movies, TV, philosophy, and comedy. We haven't gotten into the comedy yet, but we will shortly. So great guest for you today. Today I have on someone I connected with on Twitter, Sid Ja. Could potentially be pronouncing that last name wrong. So if he's listening or anyone coming for him is listening, please feel free to email me and correct me. Email's going to be in the description to this, and then I'll edit and change accordingly. Sid's awesome. He's the first guest, as we discussed, the first guest I don't personally know in real life. We connected on Twitter over some mutual interests. It's awesome, though, to be honest. It's probably my most fun conversation. I learned the most, so I'm hoping that you all learn the most as well. If you're coming here for Sid, I'd love it if you stick around. If you're listening on Apple, throw me a like, throw me a share. I usually ask people to share to their Instagram stories. That'd be awesome. Check out the other podcasts. There's one called Grit and Big Tech. If you're coming here for Sid, that's probably one that'll be a little bit interesting to you. But the rest are all great as well. So once again, thanks. Quick disclaimer, I'm actually not in the studio. Well, I don't have a studio. I'm not in my desk with my microphone. I'm recording with my AirPods outside, and I did the whole episode as such. So if you hear any problems with the audio, those problems will not likely happen again. But again, very sorry about that. I think at the end, there's a helicopter that flies by because, of course, there was. And so if you guys have any problems with that, again, let me know. I'll see if there's any way I can fix that. To be honest, I don't super know what I'm doing in that department, though. But, yep, if you're here for Sid, thanks for coming. Please stick around. If you're here for me, thanks for continuing to come back week after week. All right. And without further ado, here we are. What's up, man? How are you?
I am doing well. How's it going?
I'm great, man. Thanks.
Where are you right now? I like the open space and the
Yeah, man. I'm actually usually in Philly. I just moved to Philly in like September, but I had to go home to like the family's house for the week. And my older brother is actually working from home right now, so he's kind of taken over the best office space in the house. And believe it or not, full-time job definitely out trumps part-time podcast.
that's a tough argument to make for sure.
Thanks for coming on. Just to be totally candid, you're the first guest I've had that's not someone I like personally know, like in real life. At least we've connected on Twitter a couple times just for listener's sake. I found you originally from Packy's guest post about the Spotify streaming wars with Secession. That's my favorite show for sure, by far.
Yep.
Do you want to? It's pretty good. Since you're the only guest I've had, I don't like personally know. You want to do a little intro for some of the listeners?
Yeah. So, just sort of by way of background, I grew up in Southeast Asia in India. And also, went to Northwestern, from where I recently graduated, and have been writing sort of this weekly newsletter for about a year and a half now, called Sunday Snapshots. And yeah, it's been great, and it's allowed me to meet cool people like you. So, always love to do that. So, that's a short little intro.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're going to definitely get into some of the Sunday Snapshot stuff in a bit. Yep. First, so you're in D.C. right now, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
How's this weekend, then? I know I read your article yesterday about the lack of distancing was freaking you out a bit, for sure.
I think, I think the results were like 95% Biden to 5% Trump in D.C., which, tells you everything you sort of need to know about what side the sentiments were for. But it was a pretty good weekend. I think, I also think that there are just like in addition to obviously sort of the political sentiment, there is this sense of like no one's going out. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I was with a friend and we were walking by one of these sort of block parties, I would almost call them.
Yeah.
And I had this very strong sentiment and I said this to him, I was like, I think, yes, there's obviously the political victory, but I also think it's because people have just been stuck inside and this is the closest thing that's going to happen to a party in 2020. I thought the political stuff is separate, but I also thought that was something interesting that I noticed.
Yeah, man, I had a similar situation. I woke up, I was still in Philly yesterday and the day before, obviously, and I woke up and we walked down to like Rittenhouse Square. And yeah. Philly was obviously such an important city in a very important state in this election that people were going absolutely crazy. In Rittenhouse Square at like 11 a.m., there was people, you would have thought it was a day drink at like a college. There's people like playing flip cup in the park and like having the best time of their life. Like,
yep, yeah.
Which was definitely good to see. It was refreshing.
Yes, yes. It almost felt jarring, and it's something that I've noticed even in, you know, if I'm watching a movie or if I'm watching TV and I see a large crowd, there's almost like a reflex where I go, whoa, that's not supposed to happen. But obviously, you know, not it wasn't shot during COVID times, so I think that's funny, and I had that, or I just had that reaction in real life when I saw the groups. But you know, to a large extent, most people were sort of, you know, had a mask on and stuff, and so hopefully there's no surges in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, but we just got good news from Pfizer this morning, so
yes, I saw that. It's not like we I think the logistical part of that is going to be super interesting. It's something that I talk about, you know, pretty frequently on the newsletter. It's just sort of this there's a layer you see and there's a layer that you don't of you know, e-commerce and, sort of retail and whatnot, which is the logistical part. And so I'm actually super interested to see what the, obviously vaccine is going to be great news. And, but I'm very interested to see what the logistics of that rollout look like. And I think there's there's tremendous opportunity there to do public good, or to do a sort of a public good, for some of these more back end oriented companies.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into more, I definitely want to get into newsletters. I have some questions to ask you about that. Yeah. I think you'll have some good thoughts on.
Yeah.
Before we get into that though, you graduated from Northwestern this year, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. I graduated from Delaware this year. Got my
nice. Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was gonna say. Is that you know, at least for the next 3 to 6 months, you can really wear that hat with a lot of pride.
I haven't taken it off since like Thursday.
Yeah,
but so most of my listeners are same boat as us, kind of just graduated, many of whom are still either looking full-time for a job. I actually was in that boat until Friday. I got my first like full-time offer that I accepted, which is very exciting.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And so many of my listeners are still kind of in that boat. Obviously this year, it's always weird graduating. I imagine I've only done it once, but it's always weird graduating. And this year, just especially with so much uncertainty, a ton of people are living at home. I know you just moved to DC. Kind of like, what was your graduation during pandemic plan, and like, how did you kind of make the most of it?
Yeah, I think it's obviously tough, right? Where, you kind of get to, it was sort of cut short, and especially Northwestern operates in quarters. So, and at least in my mind, my life was broken up into quarters. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I never got to the last one. So there was this mental block of, all right, didn't have a full graduation. Luckily, what did happen is that most of my close friends stayed back, in Evanston. And so at least I was, and, just being very frank, Evanston, which is where Northwestern is, it's kind of 30 minutes out of Chicago, was it's enough of a suburb and it's enough removed that things never really got that bad mm-hmm. there. I'm, you know, super lucky for that. And so, I mean, we all sort of lived in the same sort of, you know, around the same block and we had like a bubble, you know, I always say that we were doing pods since like day one, where we would only see like the five of us or the six of us. And so I think that was obviously, you know, that really helped. And I never felt this sort of, you know, complete isolation that some people had to deal through and, you know, super, super fortunate for that. In terms of plans, I was extremely lucky. I had plans, you know, sort of finalized, you know, sort of recruitment going back until or going back to November 2019. So I kind of had an idea of what I was going to do. And you know, my sort of start dates and stuff didn't move around too much. Mm-hmm. I really didn't move around at all. Obviously, I had to start virtually, and which is a whole thing on its, you know, which was a separate topic. But I felt that, you know, got super lucky, and some of my friends were not as lucky and had offers sort of pulled and stuff. And it's tough to sort of see that. And, you know, I tried to be, you know, there for them as much as I can, given that I was in this fortunate position. But yeah, in terms of that, the graduation stuff was not ideal. I think for me, the, you know, having that one day of commencement, like if I'm being completely fair, like I think that's more for the parents, you know, and I'm sorry that my parents didn't get to see that, but you know, for me, it didn't, you know, it didn't feel that important. And so for me, it was about like, hey, do I get to spend time with my friends? I got to do that in sort of limited contexts. But yeah, so it was sort of a mixed bag, and, you know, I was certainly lucky to not see the worst of it, you know, compared to some of my friends who were in, you know, let's say New York City, like obviously, you know, you change your complete life, around it. So, I rambled on for quite a while there, but just wanted to cover, you know, at least a couple of bases.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's definitely some like really specific parallels to how our life in Newark was. Newark is literally just a college town. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else there. It's Newark, mm-hmm. Delaware, for God's sake. We had a really similar situation. One of my friends who like is one of the smartest in our bunch, I'd say. And again, maybe this is flawed logic, but it sounds like similar to what you did. He just kind of said like, if none of us leave, and we just stay between our two apartments and like Chipotle, like we should be good, right? And so we just stretched that like as long as we could. And then and then it did, towards the end, a lot of people did start to go home because people kind of, the rest of the student body got wind that was happening, and then everyone started mm-hmm. flooding in. And then now it's like I live with my grandmother at home. So I was like, okay, this is now irresponsible for me to be staying here.
Yeah.
I have to go home at some point.
Yeah. And I think that was the key thing that I sort of, you know, everyone has sort of personal risk measure or sort of a personal risk parameter. I think it was, you know, me, like on a daily basis, like let's look at the one or two places that I, you know, that I'm going to go to continue, like, you know, on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Do any of those places have sort of, you know, at-risk people that I know? I mean, you know, you can obviously interact with people and not know that, but, you know, to the best of my knowledge, am I putting anyone's health at risk? And if the answer is no, I feel, you know, personally, like, sort of consciously clean, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So you, while at Northwestern, started Sunday Snapchats, right?
Yes.
So how, like, with taking classes, I know, I personally, my senior year, didn't have like the craziest of workloads just because I worked pretty hard in my like younger years.
Yep.
But, like, while taking classes and working on something like that and kind of managing like a social life, just from like a productivity standpoint, like how do you, what's your like system?
I wish I had a system.
Yeah.
I think there was some good timing here. And I think you touched on the most important bit already, which was I started it in the spring quarter of my junior year. So May 2019 was, I think, when the first issue went out. and that's already towards the end, like, you know, school ends in June. And so, you know, there's that initial like enthusiasm bump that gets you to, let's say, four or five issues. And by the time that rolled around, I was in summer, like I had an internship, but, you know, which was demanding, but not to an extent where I didn't have any sort of free time. And, you know, come back, I would, you know, should do my reading, hang out with friends. And then I had enough time, especially on the weekends, to sort of dedicate to that craft. And I think that sort of 3 to 4 month incubation period was really critical, where I just built that habit of like sort of putting words to the page. And I think that was, you know, sort of the timing, and I mean, I wasn't, you know, this wasn't a conscious effort, but I think that at the end of the day, I think if I were to think about why the habit stuck, it was because it had that sort of 3 to 4 month incubation period where I just had the free time to be able to do it. And no other sort of responsibilities, like you said. And, you know, again, and then you take that, you sort of stretch that into senior year, and, you know, it's more the same where after, I want to say, October, November, like, yeah, classes really take a back seat, and it's much more about, hey, how can I make the most of my 6 months that I'm, you know, 6 more months that I'm here. And you know, for me, I really enjoyed writing the, you know, writing the newsletter. And I think that I sort of got the, you know, as with any habit, like there's, you need to see the rewards come in at sort of some level. And I think for me, it's not necessarily about number of subscribers, although it's always good to see that number go up. It's much more about like, hey, how many interesting sort of conversations I'm able to have that I wouldn't have been able to have for not this newsletter. So I think that's much more, you know, interesting to me. And I got those dopamine hits at the right time where I met this, I met a couple of other people in Chicago who were sort of also in this ecosystem. And so, you know, got a community fairly early on, and yeah, I think it was a lot about timing. And then I think from January onwards, really it's on sort of autopilot, right? Where I can decide whether or not, hey, I have some really juicy topics this week and I really want to sort of dig in and you know, go the extra, maybe go 130%. Or, hey, this is more of a regulation issue, you know, just to keep the streak going, and you know, let's say give it at 70-80%. And what I found is that it's actually extremely hard for the reader to tell which one is which, mm-hmm. but you know, just based on the time that you've spent. And so I always find that interesting, but yeah, I mean, like I would say since January to February, it's been more or less on autopilot.
Yeah. It's funny you just about the reader not knowing in your case, cause I had a similar situation happen pretty recently. Mm-hmm. Friend texted me, that was your best podcast episode yet. And I was like, dude, I thought that was a throwaway. Like I just needed something on a Monday to like get into the airwaves. Yeah. But something else you said there, I've mentioned this in the podcast before, but something else you said there about, it wasn't really about the listeners or the viewers or readers, excuse me. My kind of abundance mindset for that, you might be able to take something from. I saw a tweet a long time ago that said, and of course now I can't find it because you never can, but I saw a tweet a long time ago and it said, if you start a podcast or you start some sort of video series or a newsletter, if you have 15 people reading or listening or watching, imagine that as a small classroom. And then when you get to 30, that's a larger classroom. You get to 200, that's, mm-hmm. you filled up a whole lecture hall of people coming just to listen to like your words. So that's been kind of my abundance mindset there.
Yep. Yeah. No, I 100% agree. And you know, as those like, you know, 3 digits go into 4 digits and hopefully soon into 5 digits, mm-hmm. it's very, it, you know, I think it's extremely, just like very heartening that like, you know, people sort of let you speak to them and hopefully I'm providing something of value. And, I'm really grateful to the readers.
Yeah, I'm still flopping in between the 2 and 3 digits, but hopefully.
I think with podcasts, it's difficult, right? Like, there's not that notion of a feed that that you know that an inbox, that an email inbox has. So yeah, I feel like you're playing a different game and like the metrics are different. I know like the most successful podcasts, they're like low five digits.
Yeah.
Or like, I wouldn't say the most successful podcasts, but a lot of the like podcasts you would have that have cool guests and you would say are, you know, are successful. Like 10 to 20K is like the, you know, you're getting into the 0.0001%.
Yeah.
And you know, anything above that is like, there are like 20 podcasts that have that. And so I think there's like more steps, whereas on newsletters, like you'd have a million, you know, like, you know, like there are mailing lists with hundreds of thousands of people, like there's more granularity. Mm-hmm. And so I do feel like you're playing a different game with the podcast.
Yeah. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Like I'm not Rogan or Dave Portnoy or NPR and I don't want to be any of those things. So that's, that's a good thing there. Something you said there literally brings directly to like the next point that I wanted to talk about with you.
I'm glad I could provide a you know, a great transition.
Yeah, that couldn't have been a more natural segue actually. Yeah. But email newsletters in general, I'm subscribed to four of them, five of them maybe. Where do you think these, I just feel like one day I woke up and they were just all in my mailbox and I don't really know where they came from. I remember freshman year, like someone who was in my fraternity that was a little older than me, recommended Morning Brew for like business news, and that was the first one I subscribed to. I'm sure a lot of people have similar situations because they're kind of the household name. But where do you think that these, this new like media came from, and why do you think it's so popular?
I think that's a really good question. I'd say I'm like too young to answer this question. I think we're too young because I don't think it's new, right? Like there's, you know, email's been around, like people have been like, what's the difference between me sending something slightly well packaged and like someone sending five links to their friends and family?
Yeah.
Like, is that a newsletter? You know, I'd say in like a very pure form it is. And so, and like beyond that, what I would say is the reason behind sort of these structures evolving and companies and platforms evolving around it is I think there's a deep distrust of, you know, authority and institutions and it's you know, increasing at least if it's not deep already. And I'm not an authority, right? Like, you know, there's people who are not, you know, authorities who are doing really well in the email game. Like I bet if Barack Obama started a newsletter, like would it be successful? Yes, but not because people want to hear, like it'd be successful because he's already successful, right? Yeah. Like I don't think any other medium that I have seen recently, you know, I think newsletters and podcasts being the two that come to mind, has been able to solve the 0-to-1 problem as effectively as they have. And so, and I think a lot of it comes from, you know, this anti-authority sort of undertone that's going on in society right now. And I think that the media journalism one, you know, you see on Substack, like sort of tons of journalists come on there and sort of leave their full-time jobs. I think it's the first wave. I think it's the most obvious one. What's more interesting to me is this, you know, what happens when other professions start to do that? Like what happens when a researcher at the NIH, let's say, starts to publicly talk about his, you know, his or her research, you know, in an accessible way, like, you know, and that becomes like I'm much more excited about that than like the pure media journalism thing, because I think that'll play out, and like, you know, it's you know, some, it's becoming more and more clear what the outcomes will be there for the next 10 to 15 years. But I'm much more interested in like what happens when you expand this model and this trend to other sort of verticals, for the lack of a better word. That's my bullish take. The bearish take is it's still very much, you know, controlled by, there's like, you know, I tweeted this a long time ago. It was like, you know, if 90% of your list comes from one email provider, you're more independent, but you're not independent, mm-hmm. right? Like, you could be Ben Thompson, and if Gmail says, hey, today I'm going to decide to send your newsletter to the spam folder, you're done, right? Like, it's, and so that's a little disconcerting. And I've seen that happen a couple of times to me in the year and a half. And like, it's very obvious when like something goes to people's spam folder. Open rates drop from, let's say, 70%, which is like, I fluctuate between like 60-70%. They just go down to like 24 or something ridiculous. And so it's very obvious when that happens. And so that's my bearish take, is if, Gmail starts a newsletter tab, that's bad. It needs to, like, a very fundamental part of the experience is that it's part of the inbox, and that it is given the same importance as an email from your friend or something, right? Like, there's a psychological thing there that's very important. It's kind of like you go back to Facebook and the newsfeed, and one of the critical sort of innovations there is that, hey, something that your friends post and some dumb funny thing that your friend posts is given the same importance as something published by the Wall Street Journal, right? And it's in the same feed, and I think that there's value there, and I think that it's a similar kind of psychological thing on the newsletter front. So that's my bearish take, right? Where the larger and it's almost like the DJ Khaled meme of suffering from success. It's like the more success people see in this area, the less the smaller the arbitrage opportunity becomes, and the more the likelihood that something like that is going to happen. And so, there's almost an inevitability to that, but it's about how long can we keep the gates open and sort of let not get crushed by the Gmail spam.
The one thing that would make me optimistic about that not happening would be that, as obvious as it is to the composer that it's ended up in the spam folder, it should be, in theory, equally as obvious to the consistent reader. Like, I know if mm-hmm. I wake up in the morning and Morning Brew, or I've recently gotten into Robin Hood Snacks, which I know is Morning Brew's like one of their like probably mm-hmm. main competitors, but I have been enjoying them as well. But if I wake up and one of them isn't there, I like am confused and need to go look for it. So, and then when I go look for it, if it ended up in the spam folder, I just drag it on over to the regular folder,
Yep. And I think that stuff helps, but I think Morning Brew is like a 50-person company, mm-hmm. right? And it sends you stuff daily, right? Like, how does that? And I would say that most people who write newsletters are not doing that. Like, that's a media company.
Yeah.
I'm talking more about sort of, they just got acquired by, for I think $250 million. Or three-quarters of $100 million. I'm not that, I wouldn't say most people writing are. And so there is there's interesting dynamics that I'm not quite sure where's the sort of equilibrium point. Where the next equilibrium point is, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just something we'll find out as we go. Question I take from that, though, would be if the bearish take is the potential of like Gmail and Google and Facebook, Apple, like filtering these, why, like, what do you think would make them want to filter your newsletter? If you're saying that the reason that you don't have to worry about Morning Brew and Robinhood going anywhere is because they have this like obvious now this wallet backing them, but also like the whole like name behind them, what would be the incentive for kind of a giant company like that to be filtering just like Jim's newsletter?
Oh, I don't think they would you know, I think none of these decisions are made sort of maliciously. It'll be like some product manager coming, being like, hey, we've heard from a lot of users that people really like reading newsletters in their email inbox, in Gmail. And I think it'd be really good if, you know, there was a separate tab for it where you could have all the, and you see these apps come through, checking one of them out a couple of weeks ago, where it's like, oh, you can subscribe, you have all your newsletters in one place, blah, 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 blah. And I think that it almost misses the point, where the point is that it's a part of your inbox. The point is that, right? Like, so I don't think, you know, anyone's going to, they don't have an incentive to do it for me. They have an incentive to like make the, the experience better, quote unquote, for users. Right. When they are thinking about that, it could very hypothetically be, it could be true that someone reading Sunday Snapshots is taking time away from the core job of email, which is, you know, sort of, let's say, correspondence. And, you know, in order to double down on that, they sort of filter all the newsletters in one way. Right. And so, I don't think anyone would do it, you know, maliciously. I think it would be more of a side effect or unintended consequence of some other decision that's, you know, probably not. Yeah, like I don't think I'd be a stakeholder in this decision. The person on the Gmail team would not think about me, and that's how I would get sort of booted off to that newsletter tab. If that answers your question.
Yeah, that makes sense. I did want to talk a little bit about your book of the week portion.
Yeah.
Are you reading one book per week right now, or are you kind of?
If it's a longer book, I'll tend to divide it up into a couple. Like my personal goal is something like 200 to 250 pages a week. I have a pretty like systematic way of doing it where, you break it down into, say, 5 days. You got to take a rest day. You break 250 pages down into 5 days, so 50 pages per day on average. And so typically, what ends up happening is I'll do 60 to 70 pages, and then I'll skip it another day and sort of make it up. It's definitely the thing that I enjoy writing the most, for sure. I think it kind of forces me to sit down and put down thoughts about, you know, the books that I'm reading. And so, I really enjoy it and happy to talk more about that sort of process.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to take up like the most of your time today though. And there was something from your article yesterday that I am interested in and have a whole theory about as well. But you talked yesterday about like network effect based markets. And then your example was kind of Venmo when they see a large uptick when people go back to college. So I listened to a podcast a while ago with Ezra Klein. And he was talking about, it was probably like 3 years ago at this point, he was talking about social capital and how like now being considered high class is less about how much money you make. And it's more about if you go to Whole Foods or Food Lion, or if your children play violin or guitar or insert random thing here, like Trader
Joe's. How many extracurriculars are they doing after school?
Yeah. Or like what gym you go to versus what gym you don't go to. So I have this whole thing that I've been like trying to work on. I thought about making it into like a little bit of a longer essay, but I haven't done that yet, about kind of digital social capital, because we're in kind of a digital world right now. So maybe instead of it being, we can't be friends with Amy because she goes to Planet Fitness and we go to SoulCycle, maybe now it'll be, she doesn't listen to X podcast or subscribe to X, Y, and Z on Twitter. So how do you think kind of the virtual world will kind of affect that and the network effects markets, or the network based markets, which kind of ties right into those social capital aspects?
Yeah. I mean, let's say that if I was really good at answering that question, like, you know, I could be a 100 millionaire, right?
Exactly.
and so, my sort of fragments of where this exists is you're already sort of seeing the first wave of this with, I don't know if you saw the Sent with Superhuman, you know, badge thing. Mm-hmm. So for the uninitiated, like, you know, Superhuman is this email client that costs $30 a month. It's got a bunch of keyboard shortcuts. It's like designed for like, for you to get through email fast.
Right.
Now, why do people, and I was, I don't remember where I saw this. I don't know. But basically the idea was that why does this work so well? And why are people paying $30 for this email client that, like, you know, sure is useful, but like debatable.
Yeah.
It's because what you're signaling when you sign up for this and you sort of add the Sent with Superhuman label, or you share it, or you talk about the product favorably, is, hey, I am an important enough person to get a lot of email. And not only am I really important, but I also care, and that I will get to your email fast, right? So it's like, to what extent is this actually about what it claims? And I'm sure that there's a portion of the, you know, the really busy executives who get hundreds of emails every day. Like, I'm sure that that portion of the user base, it actually is about the job to be done, which is to get through email really fast. But to what extent, or to what portion of the population is the job to be done to yet you still care? I don't know. Like, I would say it's a sizable amount. And that's a digital good, you know, and that's, you know, you see the sort of the badges. What you're saying is it's a blue check mark equivalent. Exactly. I think that those things are, you know, starting to come up. And this is something that I'm working on, sort of long term over the course of the next two to three months is a series of, or, you know, putting together some ideas on fractional ownership. And it's about, oh, like, you know, you could own a piece of the original Air Jordans or whatever, right? And it's not about the fact that you actually own it and sort of the monetary value of it. It's that, hey, I now own a piece of this thing that, and like, you know, you can share it on Instagram or and whatnot. And so, it's very interesting. And, you know, there's, how do you introduce scarcity into a system, which by definition, you know, the digital systems, like, by definition is built on the fact that there is no scarcity. This the artificialness. I don't know. I think, you know, I'm rambling on here now, but I think that there's tons of sort of interesting tidbits that you can already start to see, and will only get more interesting as we, you know, as we go, as these things develop more.
The scarcity thing you just brought up there is, to be honest, not really something I had thought of too much, but that's a really interesting point, just because I'm thinking back to, even on a much smaller scale, when I was at school, kind of the people who would work out at like the Orange Theory Fitness instead of the school gym, me and one of my mm-hmm. friends like tried to go to one of those, and you have to sign up like a week in advance to get like a class because there's 10 seats in here. And so that's why it's so cool for the 10 sorority girls that are in each one of those classes. But it's just because of how like limited that is. It's like what Supreme did with t-shirts so long ago, and now they're doing it with everything.
Yep. Yeah. It's almost bad because you'll start to see your own actions through that lens and everyone else's actions through that lens, and it becomes really like uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But it is to a large extent, it is the truth. And so in terms of how people behave and, you know, the types of things that people do, and like, you know, going really meta here, you know, we talked about the newsletter. To what extent is the newsletter like me trying to convince myself and other people that, hey, I've got all these cool ideas and, you know, you should listen to me, versus like the pure, journey of learning. It's probably a good blend. And, if I had to put numbers to it, it'd be uncomfortable how large the first one would be. Once you start seeing it, it's there everywhere. So
yeah. So before we wrap up, the show is called Fun Employment. So we'd be amiss to not talk about at least like two fun things. So just real quick, one thing I've been doing with everyone is a little bit different. I've been changing it per person. And then one thing I've done with every guest, which is going to be fun. But first, we've been doing kind of like a recommendation series here. Mm-hmm. And so I think on the last one, I did some music, so I don't want to do that again. So let's do three, like, I don't know. Let's do like one TV show and one podcast that someone should check out that you don't think they've seen before.
Okay. TV show. If you haven't checked out Succession, like I think that's, you know, top of mind, and you should. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. I had a moment on, I spoke with someone who's a big Succession fan on the podcast before, and we talked about it at the end for a bit. Yeah. And she was like, why do you think people like shamed me for this? So I'm going to repeat it for some reason. But she was like, why do you think people don't like it? And I was telling him about like an argument I had with one of my roommates who doesn't like it. And I was just like, dude, you're just not smart enough for it.
Yeah. No, I think it's because no one in that show is actually likable. I think that's why people don't like it. There's no one to root for. And you start and
everyone
to root for
at the same time, though.
Yes. And like, I started to root for Kendall in like episode 6, and that's a pretty high bar to get to, right? Like, you know, you want to ideally be hooked in like one or two episodes. And I think that the show does a bad job of immediately hooking you. If people haven't watched House of Cards, they should do that. And like, you know, that's the example of I always give is, you know, the like Frank Underwood's character, like that's the first 2 minutes of that where, you know, his neighbor's dog gets hit and he goes through the whole like, you know, monologue. Like that is that entire character in a nutshell. And like that's, and you're hooked and you know, you're like, so I think there's an art to the introduction of characters, and I don't think that Succession does it really well. So I guess I gave you two. So Succession and House of Cards. I've been rewatching House of Cards.
Yeah, that's perfect. So have you checked out Yellowstone?
No.
Yellowstone is essentially, it is, here's how it was described to me and like sold to me. It's Succession with cowboys, because they're in, like Montana, and they're fighting over like a big piece of land. It's essentially like the same plot line. Like the Stewie group in Succession is like the Native American Indian group in Yellowstone. And then there's like the family that owns the ranch, and they all want to take the ranch from their dad and do X, Y, and Z with it. It's been pretty good. I started, the first episode is an hour and a half long, which is a tough, like I'm watching a movie for the debut. And to be honest, I don't necessarily relate as much to cowboys as I do with like the New York media crowd. Not that I'm hardly anything like the Roys, but I still like speak that language more than I know about cattle.
Another show that comes to mind if people haven't watched it is Curb Your Enthusiasm, and like
that's the best show.
I think people are hesitant to dive into a show that's like 10 seasons. I would say just like you can really start anywhere, and it's pretty sort of context free. That's probably like my I just want to, you know, kind of relax and kick back show. So
yeah, I had a friend then, wanted to start Curb. I told him to start on season 6, watch 6 through 10, and then go back to 1 if he like really wanted to.
And then podcast. I listened to this podcast by a big sort of you know, inspiration for me, Sam Hinkie, so former GM of the 76ers, trust the process. He was on the ESPN Daily. It's like a 2-hour podcast. I think it came out last week, so or like around the 30th or 31st. And I've listened to it like a couple of times now. Just one of the most amazing. I've got to say, that's the coolest thing that's happened to probably definitely easily the coolest thing that's happened to me is Sam Hinkie following me and like tweeting at me. Like that was a mind. That was like a, oh shit, like this is real. And so, you know, big fan of his work and you know, listen to that. So that's a recent podcast episode, I guess. I don't really listen to the ESPN Daily, but that was great. So people should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I personally am very excited that you said that because I have a 2-hour drive ahead of me in 15 minutes, yeah. And so I'm gonna crush that.
It's exactly. It's I think it's like an hour 40 minutes or something like that. So it should be perfect.
Yeah, that's perfect. And then so here's the last thing that I've done with all my guests. This is just something I'm like kind of trying. One of my favorite podcasts does like a similar version of it. So it's just going to be you and the listener. So I'm going to take my AirPods off and walk kind of like around this corner, and it's just you and the listener. And you're just going to tell them one thing they can do for fun this week, no matter where they are or what they have access to. And I like never listen to these. So it's just the guest talking to the listener. And then when you're finished with that, you can sign off. Thanks for coming once again.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
Yeah, obviously. You know, thanks so much, man, and thanks so much for having me. And you know, I appreciate you. You know, excited about what you're building here, and so you know, want to see you. You know, keep doing this, and yeah, pretty excited to hear you know, future episodes.
Hell yeah, man! Thank you. So just you and the guest now.
All right.
Or you.
Okay. Okay. Hey guest, so I guess this is, you know, high pressure, but I'd say, and this is something I've done with a few of my readers, is just you know, go to the local post office or the nearest Target and grab 2 or 3 postcards and send them to people in your life. I think there's something so important about you know, or something so different about, you know, getting a physical piece of mail, that I, you know, it adds sort of freshness to any sort of relationship. And so, you know, not exactly what I would call maybe fun, but it's definitely extremely satisfying. And so, you know, and then, definitely, you know, listen to the next episode of Fun Employment. You know, Pat's doing a great job here, and I'm super excited to see where he's headed. So, two things. There you go.